This is Amherst Eclectic, and I was watching the Ten Commandments, and every time I watch the movie, which I do, I watch it every year on Easter, and I think they show it sometimes at Christmas, but I always watch it because it's, you know, one of those great films that was made. They really spent a lot of money. They had great actors in the film. Actors and actresses, and they did a really decent job. Plus, I'm a huge Yul Brynner and Charlton Heston fan, as far as that goes. I mean, I watch Ben-Hur every time it comes on. No matter what you say about Charlton Heston or Yul Brynner in their personal lives, you know, they have positives and negatives just like everybody else, but their acting was tremendous. They were really great actors, so I always watch anything that they're in. But anyway, I always start asking myself questions, and I think that this has a lot to do with what we're talking about on this channel, on this podcast. I always ask myself questions about how do they really know the history, the full history of what happened with comparing, you know, the Bible, the Talmud, the, you know, all of the different religious texts that are out there. You know, how much is true, how much isn't true, right? How much is fabricated? I mean, what we've learned over time, over the years, is that there is a lot of editing and a lot of expanding of texts that goes on. Especially when it goes from different kind of ruler to rulers over the thousands of years, different rulers and different agendas that happened during those ruling class times. And the church and the different churches that are involved and different religious sects that are involved and the different countries that take over certain... I mean, you know, you've got Alexander... the Great, who took over huge amounts of land. You have, you know, from China, oh, I can't remember what his name is. Is it Attila the Hun? Yeah, I think Attila the Hun, which they found out Attila Hun has probably 70% of the Asian population that exists on this earth has genes from Attila the Hun, because during the time when he was conquering different areas in the Asian area, which, you know, that would be Russia, Asia, India, all those areas over there. He was raping a bunch of women and also taking on a bunch of women as wives, I guess. And so his DNA is in 70% of most people who live in that area, most Asians who come from that area. Because he got so many people pregnant as he was traveling around conquering places, right? And I think they found that with other people, but he was like the worst of them as far as rape went. And so, yeah, he was not a good person. Anyway, and plus he had harems, you know, it's a Chinese Asian thing back then, I guess. But so you find that there's a lot of history that, you know, they didn't know until they started doing DNA, until they started doing time stamping, that sort of things, of all the things that they found. Well, this was an interesting little thing I tripped over, because once again, I always, every year or every 6 months when this movie is on, I look it up again, because they find different things about Moses, they find different things about Ramses, they find different things about the different pharaohs and the things that were happening during that period of time, because they have different discoveries. So over the years, as I've been watching this movie, different discoveries have come up. Well, the one discovery that I hadn't found yet, which I did find in looking this up today, let's see, I'll read the first article I found. I think this is the first article I found. Let me see. I think this is it. The first article I found was this person who had a sort of documented out like the different times and things. And it's called the Prophecy Society of Atlanta. Anyway, can Moses be found in the Egyptian history? Yes, he is there if you know where to look. So, you know, it flits back and forth. Like, some people say it's not Ramses. It was another pharaoh that he was under. And, you know, the timeline of the pharaohs and who was in rule and, you know, there's a lot of incest. You know, they married, like, the pharaohs married their sisters and they also married their own daughters. I mean, it's really sick. And they have like whoever is considered their wife in history is actually just their number one queen. They had secondary, third queens, you know, they had a whole harem, you know, and they were all of these queens were on different levels. Like, you know, they might, if the first wife, their favorite queen, their first wife, if they couldn't sire a male heir with her, then they would sire a male heir with their second queen or their third queen, or, you know. And basically the harems were just brought about as a way of being able to sire a male heir. So if the first or second or third wife or, you know, 10 wives couldn't sire a male heir, they would go and find another girl until they got a male heir, right? And so, you know, and actually, fortunately, if they did it that way, if it wasn't like a cousin or a sister, it probably helped to keep, you know, a lot of, you know, birth defects and all kinds of problems that happen when you marry too close to relatives, right? So it was probably better to have those, you know, 10 people down the line that weren't related but were in his harem have a baby, right? It was better than being like the sister, you know. And there were still children that came out of those unions. So anyway, I read up on it. And this article says, let's see. Oh my gosh, this is up the side. But anyway, it says something about the Exodus during that time, and that it really happened. And if it did, then I think I need to turn the light up on my phone here. It's pretty dark. Anyway, then they wondered if Moses is not mentioned in the Egyptian history. Well, I mean, they say that, you know, the Pharaoh of the time struck his name because they found out he was a Jew, but that could be totally made up, right? That could be something that was expanded in the Bible. You know, like I was saying, that there were things that were deleted and there were things that were expanded. I mean, apparently what they're finding out is there were a lot of female leaders that were written about, and there were a lot of women who wrote books in the Bible, but over time, time and different leaders and different religious leaders and different country leaders, those books got deleted, or they got, you know, thrown away, or they were, you know, they're gone in time, and they found different copies of things that people won't recognize, but that there were more women that wrote actual chapters of the Bible, right? Basically history. You know, they were just basically writing down their life history, which is what the Bible is. It's just a bunch of people who wrote down what they experienced with at different times in history and what they experienced within their religions, right? But I think those things get expanded and deleted. Anyway, like they delete out the fact that the priests, the Hebrew priests, actually had harems. They actually had women in the temple that they had sex with. They delete that out. And I'm sure people will go, oh, that's not true. Yeah, it is. That happened. Just same thing with the Catholic religion. Priests used to be married, used to be able to get married. And then they gained too much control, so the monarchies at the time got rid of that and said that they couldn't be married anymore. They sort of took away a lot of their rights and a lot of their power because they needed to get control over the Catholic Church or get control over the priest, right? So that's why recently when the current priest was talking about allowing priests to be married, it wasn't shocking to me because they were allowed to be married before. So anyway, but I guess one of the punishments for the things that they did in the past, you know, questioning the monarchies, questioning the rulers, was to take away that right. All right, so there's a lot of additions, deletions, a lot of things that we don't know about. So that's why I always look this up, because it's like, okay, what are we going to find out again when they find out timestamps on different artifacts that they might find in these pyramids or in these graves, you know, or things are going to come out, or some things that have been held down by the church are going to come out. Some truths are finally going to be revealed that maybe the church has felt like it's time to go ahead and let that truth out, that they can still maintain control with that truth coming out. Who knows? Okay. So this person says, well, it's quite possible that Moses is featured in the historical records of the 18th dynasty, that he has been overlooked because historians and the Bible scholars have not been using a correct Bible chronology for that period. So, like they say, they're not really sure what time the Bible happened, when some of this stuff was written. They're not really positive of the timeline. So, okay. Here's what they think the correct chronology tells us. Moses was born in the second year of Thutmose. And they're thinking that Thutmose, that's Thutmose, they're thinking that that's the most is why Moses ended up being called Moses. That really his Egyptian name was Thutmose. But anyway, there's a footnote on that. But the first Egyptian king to have the name, birth name, Thutmose, meaning born of Thoth. That's different. I thought it was Thut, but anyway, some have associated the name Moses with the last two hieroglyphs in the pharaoh's name. MS, you know, Moses, which means bear, as in bear a child, and T, and it is similar to the last syllables of the name Ramos, meaning born of Ra, which was the name of the father of, oh God, I'm not really sure how to pronounce this name, but it's Hatshepsut, great steward, and then Sinamut, who lived about the same time as Moses. And Hatshepsut is a woman, and it's apparently the woman that pulled Moses out of the water, but we'll go on. Shown below is the expansion of the timeline, and they do a whole timeline down here. I'm not going to read through it, but we'll hit on the major points here. The hypothesis is that Thutmose became pharaoh in the year 1522. The new king decreed that all male Hebrew infants should be killed. So that was like, that's the first Thutmose? Yeah. And there's like three Thutmose in history. The following year, 1523, his 12-year-old daughter, and this is the name that I just read that I couldn't pronounce, Hatshepsut, rescued the infant Moses from the Nile with the mention of raising him as a member of her household. When Thutmose I died in 1518, his son, Thutmose II, became pharaoh, and the new pharaoh's half-sister, which is the girl who pulled Moses out of the water, Hatshepsut became his wife and queen. In the second year of Thutmose II's reign, according to your author's interpretation of an inscription on this block that he read from the Chapelle Rouge, a festival of Amun was celebrated, during which Hatshepsut was recognized as pharaoh, circa 1516. During their co-reign, you know, so Thutmose's co-reign with her. Thutmose II produced no male heir with Hatshepsut, but he did sire a son, Thutmose III, with a secondary wife named Izet. With Thutmose II, he died in 1504, which is, this is B.C., Hatshepsut continued as a pharaoh, at first sharing her reign with her stepson, Thutmose III, who, being less than 2 years old, was too young to rule. 7 years later, in 1498 B.C., Hatshepsut assumed a masculine public identity and reigned as king of Egypt for the next 17 years. So, in public, she was thought to be masculine. Or she dressed as masculine. So she went in drag, basically. And she did this with her son, her stepson, Thutmose, serving in a subordinate role. Sometime after her recognition as pharaoh, Hatshepsut elevated Senemutnit to be her chief steward, top official. But Senemutnit disappeared from history in 1483, about a year before Hatshepsut's death. So Senemutnit exited from history at precisely the same time that the biblical Moses fled to Midian. After murdering an Egyptian, as recorded in Exodus chapter 2, verse 11 through 15. Now, in the movie, Moses kills one of the Egyptian overseers of the slaves, because he's, you know, trying to take advantage of one of the beautiful Egyptian women. That's the story. And who this woman is, I can't remember her name. She ends up being Joshua's wife. So that simultaneously timing raises an interesting question. Did Moses kill Senemut and then have to flee from Hatshepsut's wrath before returning to Egypt 40 years later as the prophet Moses? So Hatshepsut was actually the woman who pulled him out at 12 years old out of the water and then raised him in the household of the pharaoh, right? Under her relatives, who has now become in public a male pharaoh to maintain the office of being the leader, the pharaoh. She's going around looking like a male so that people will accept her more as the pharaoh. So, is she the one that actually exiled him and felt, you know, that he hurt her by, coming out and saying that he was a Hebrew when she was trying to hide it all those years? So, really, when you see the stepmother in the movie, that's really who was the pharaoh at the time, is what they're saying. And it wasn't Ramses. Ramses came later, apparently. So they're saying this happened before Ramses showed up. All right. Or Ramus that we heard before. Okay. Let's see. So that secondary would explain who Moses was raised as a son to Hatshepsut, and this enjoying great privilege as the son of the king would, you know, fear Pharaoh for killing an Egyptian in the case, the king's, you know, most trusted advisor, which is what they're saying happened. Whatever the case, the synchronization between the Egyptian chronology and history as known from inscriptions and the Hebrew chronology and history as recounted in the Bible do reveal some interesting correlations. So I found that kind of interesting. And then I read another article, which is basically from Britannica, and it's called Hatshepsut, Ruler of Egypt. So they recognize Hatshepsut as, you know, being the ruler of England as well, or as of Egypt, excuse me, as well. So, let's see. I'm trying to turn the light up on my phone here so I can read this a little better. Okay, so we go to Hatshepsut, also spelled Hatshepsut, whatever. It's not that different. A female king of Egypt reigned in her own right from 1473 to 1458 BCE. When attained unprecedented power for a woman, adopting the full titles and regalia of a pharaoh. Hatshepsut, the elder daughter of the 18th dynasty king Thutmose I and his consort Amos, was married to her half-brother Thutmose II, son of Lady Montefret. Since three of Montefret's older sons had died prematurely, Thutmose II inherited his father's throne about 1492 BC. With Hatshepsut as his consort. Hatshepsut bore one daughter, Neferi, which that makes me wonder if that's Nefertiri or Nefertiri in the movie, but no son. She had no son. When her husband died about 1479 BCE, the throne passed to his son, Thutmose III, born to Isis, a lesser harem queen. As Thutmose III was an infant, Hatshepsut acted as a regent for the young king. For the first few years of her stepson's reign, Hatshepsut was an entirely conventional regent, but by the end of his seventh regnal year, she had been crowned king and adopted a full royal tutelaire, the royal protocol adopted by Egyptian sovereigns. Hatshepsut and Thutmose III were now co-rulers of Egypt, with Hatshepsut very much the dominant king. Hitherto, Hatshepsut had been depicted as a typical queen with a female body and appropriately feminine garments, but now, after a brief period of experimentation that involved combining a female body with a kingly male regalia, her formal portraits began to show Hatshepsut with a male body, wearing the traditional regalia of the kilt, crown, or headcloth, and false beard. To dismiss this as a serious attempt to pass herself off as a man is to misunderstand Egyptian artistic convention, which showed things not as they were, but as they should be, and causing herself to be depicted as a traditional king. Hatshepsut ensured that this is what she would become. Hatshepsut never explained why she took the throne or how she persuaded Egypt's elite to accept her new position. However, as an essential element of her success was a group of loyal officials, many handpicked, who controlled all the key positions in her government. Most prominently amongst these was Senenetmut, overseer of all rural works and tutor to Neferu, which is the guy who apparently Moses killed. Some observers have suggested that Hatshepsut and Senenmut may have been lovers, but there is no evidence to support this claim. Well, if that was true, that would be why she got so upset when Moses killed him. Traditionally, Egyptian kings defended their land against the enemies who looked at the Egyptian borders. Hatshepsut's reign was essentially a peaceful one, and her foreign policy was based on trade rather than war. See, this is what happened when you have female leaders. There's no war. It's about political and trade. And that's how they deal. But scenes on the walls of her Deri-Bahari temple in western Thebes suggest that she began with a short successful military campaign in Nubia. More complete scenes show Hatshepsut's seaborne trading expeditions to Punt, a trading center since vanished on the East African coast beyond the southernmost end of the Red Sea. Gold, ebony, animal skins, baboons, processed myrrh, and living myrrh trees were brought back to Egypt, and the trees were planted in the gardens of Deir al-Bahari, which is, I guess, this temple that she restored. Restoration and building were important royal duties. Hatshepsut claimed falsely to have restored the damage wrought by the Hyksos Asian kings during their rule in Egypt. She undertook an extensive building program in Thebes. This focused on the temples of her divine father, the national god Amon-Re, Amon, at the Karnak temple complex. She remodeled her earthly father's hypostyl hall, added a Baroque shrine, the Red Chapel, and introduced two pairs of obelisks. At Beni Hansen in Middle Egypt, she built a rock-cut temple known in Greek as Spacis Omidus. Her supreme achievement was the Deir al-Bahari temple, designed as a funerarian monument for Hatshepsut. It was dedicated to Amon-Re and included a series of chapels dedicated to Osiris, Re, Hathor, Anubis, and the royal ancestors. Hatshepsut was to be interred in the Valley of the Kings, where she extended her father's tomb so that the two could lie together. Okay, there's more information here, but I think I'm running out of time on here. Toward the end of her reign, Hatshepsut allowed Thutmose to play an increasingly prominent role in state affairs. Following her death, Thutmose III ruled Egypt alone for 33 years. At the end of his reign, an attempt was made to remove all traces of Hatshepsut's rule. Her statues were torn down, her monuments were defaced, and her name was removed from the official king list. Early scholars interpreted this as an act of vengeance, but it seems that Thutmose was ensuring that the succession would run from Thutmose I to Thutmose II to Thutmose III without female interruption. Hatshepsut sank into the obscurity until 1822, when the decoding of the hieroglyphic script allowed archaeologists to read the Deir al-Bahari inscriptions. Initially, the discrepancy between the female name and the male image caused confusion, but today Thutmose side succession is well understood. So yeah, so they've discovered that she existed, and the person who had their name taken off of everything in history was actually Hatshepsut, not Moses. But because Moses was associated with her, maybe that's why his name was taken off as well, because he was considered her son. So, but they're also saying that maybe one of the Thutmose pharaohs was actually Moses. So there's that's why he was called Moses, that he actually didn't, you know, there was a pharaoh that just disappeared in history. So maybe he didn't just disappear. Maybe that was Moses, who was exiled by actually Hatshepsut, who was the pharaoh of the time. And Thutmose III, maybe he was actually the Ramses character in the movie. Interesting. All right, I'm just going to say a few more things. We're going to be probably cutting off here soon. I'm going to go into a little more of that, what I think about this, in a little bit of an extension of the podcast. So I'll just do an extension here. Hi, Amherst Eclectic. Continuing the conversation about, I cannot pronounce Hatshepsut or whatever it was, the the Egyptian, I guess, queen who became pharaoh. Interesting that this has been something that history has tried to wipe out, like they tried to wipe out so many female leaders. In fact, what they're finding as they do more historical digs in archaeology and geology, they're finding that there were many women who were soldiers, who were leaders in their communities over time, and that actually matriarchal societies, not patriarchal societies, but matriarchal societies, were really prevalent over history. And that many of them survived because during those matriarchal society reigns where women were the leaders in the community, there was a lot of, it wasn't just, okay, the woman, one woman led. A lot of the women who were leaders also brought other women around them, and it became a circle of women who led the communities. And, you know, they actually had a lot more peace, no wars, more diplomacy, more negotiations went on between tribes, between societies of other countries, etc. And that actually it was more beneficial to not just their own nuclear community, but also to outlying communities around them. And that female-led and female, you know, groups of leaders would also bring in people from the outside to help, and they would help those cities or societies. It was never about war. It was never about, well, not that it was never about. I'm sure that, you know, they have shown some battles that happened, but overall, there was a lot less fighting when there were female leaders, and there was a lot more talk, negotiation, trade, foreign diplomacy. Those sort of things happened when a woman reigned, because, you know, women don't think that way. They don't think in violent terms. They don't think in, oh, you know, we have to fight over this in order to win or lose. It's more about how can we help one another? How can we benefit from each other? How can we keep our children from dying? Because these are women who were bearing the children and, of course, had a bigger attachment to their children than the men did. For men, it's all about power, control, and, you know, who's going to get to sit at the top and who's going to be able to rule over everyone else. So that's why when there are matriarchs that are leading these countries, these villages, whatever they were in the past, there was a lot less violence, a lot less fighting. But we also see in history that there were women warriors. I mean, Viola Davis just did a movie about that, where these were the women who didn't marry, who didn't have children, who protected the African communities. But we're also finding, you know, they found a woman warrior skeleton, Scandinavian skeleton, a Viking skeleton, and the whole geological historical community just went nuts trying to prove that it wasn't a woman, when really it was. It was a woman. And the reason that they can tell that is different parts of the skeleton are, you know, pretty much a dead giveaway when it's a woman, particularly her pelvis. Pelvis is a little wider at a certain area. than it is for a man, because women are born to bear children, so you need a wider pelvic area. That's just one of the telltale signs that it is definitely a woman. So, you know, when people are arguing about sex changing and trans and all that, you know, that's a little baffling to me. When you're born a woman, you're born a woman. When you're born a man, you're born a man. Now, you can be a trans man or a trans woman who dresses, a man who dresses in female clothes, or a woman who dresses in male clothes, but skeletally, biologically, even if you take hormones, you will always be a born man or a born woman. That will never change. And I think people think taking hormones and, you know, having penises attached and all of that is going to make them into another sex. Maybe it'll help, you know, societally to look more like the sex you think that you are. But I think that's a little bit confusing. I think, you know, people should just accept who they are. If you are a man who is gay, accept that. Why do you have to change your body? Just accept where you're at. You're a man who is gay. But because society pushes that idea, I think that's why there's a lot of trans dressing going on. Same thing with a female who feels that they have more masculine feelings. Well, what's wrong with that? Be a lesbian. It's not a problem. Now, a lot of people would disagree with me, but I think that, you know, having grown up in a time when that is more accepted, maybe that's why my attitude's that way. Or maybe my attitude's that way because I've worked in the arts. I've worked in entertainment. I've worked around people who were gay or lesbian. And, you know, I've made it very clear that I am not. I'm a heterosexual to the lesbians that I have been around. Of course, they are constantly wishing that I wasn't, but so that is something I make very clear, but I'm not going to make anybody change who they are. I mean, I don't think anybody chooses to do something like that unless they really feel it, unless they really know it, unless they are gay. They are a lesbian. They are a homosexual. So I don't think that anybody chooses to live that way. I just think it's the way that they are. I mean, if you are sexually attracted to the same sex and you have no interest in the opposite sex, then obviously something biologically, chemically has happened in your development that has made you who you are. So I say there's nothing wrong with that. Doesn't mean that I have to be with you. Doesn't mean that I have to change, because guess what? Biologically and chemically, I was made and I have grown to be heterosexual. I am only interested in men. They say people are always interested in the same sex at some point in their life, which, you know, may be true. You know, I can see the beauty of a female. I'm a female, I can see the beauty of a female. I can see why a woman who is a lesbian would end up falling in love with another female. But that doesn't mean that I want to be a lesbian. You know, I've always joked around and said, you know, women are great. They're just missing the one appendage that I need. They don't have it. They have bonus appendages, but they don't have the appendage that I need. And really, for me, the male physical form is the only thing that I'm attracted to. The only thing that turns me on. I am attracted to men. I am attracted to probably a different kind of man than most people are attracted to. You know, I need something different. I need someone who is going to see me as an equal. I need someone who is going to treat me as an equal. And I need someone who is, you know, going to be loving and understanding. I'm not really into the macho guy. Not at all. Don't like them at all. But that doesn't mean I'm into effeminate sort of situations to where I would lean towards being a lesbian. No. Not at all. But anyway, I just need to be with somebody who is actually on the same page as inequality, you know. And many people have said that I'm more of a masculine sort of female. You know, just because I'm independent and I have free thinking and I think that everyone's equal. That doesn't make me masculine. That just makes me wanting to be in a more equal relationship. So, when we go back to what has happened with this this Egyptian queen turned pharaoh turned crossdresser to try and create the image that she was more of the pharaoh, because she was a pharaoh. She was made into a pharaoh, into a leader, and so she dressed the part to help people accept who she was. Does that mean she was a lesbian? No. It just means that she realized that in order to have all of society, particularly probably the male people in the society, accept her as a leader, she had to look more like past leaders, which were mostly men. Now, we don't know. There might have been other female leaders in the past. I mean, you know, the Queen of Sheba, you know, is very popular. Cleopatra is very popular. These were women rulers. So, in Egypt, you know, they were seen as rulers. They were seen as someone to reckon with. So, maybe in her time, being that, you know, she was filling in for a very much a toddler, born to be king, to be feral kid, who was, you know, basically her nephew until he was old enough to be able to rule. They call them consorts, whatever. So she was filling in for that. So maybe she thought that dressing as a man or dressing in the traditional garments that a male pharaoh wore was the way to be a little more accepted, or maybe to make people a little more comfortable with the situation, or even to set it up for later her nephew becoming pharaoh, to not totally change everything. But everyone pretty much knew that she was a queen, a Egyptian queen. They weren't stupid. But I think the visual of seeing something of what might have been a man walking around in the pharaoh garb helps people to accept it, help people to see her more as a strong leader than maybe before. And even, you know, at the beginning of Hatshepsut's reign, she had a few battles that she waged, you know, across the borders. She did use military force in the beginning, even though most of her reign was peaceful, and it was foreign policy, and it was negotiations, and it was trade that most of her reign was. Now, I'm thinking her reign was somewhere between 32 years. It was the time that she reigned before finally turning over the power to her nephew, who she slowly brought in and slowly gave more and more head of state responsibilities, until I think she felt that he was ready, right? And then, you know, upon her death, he took over. So, apparently, she was accepted so much, you know, did such a great job, that she didn't really lose her reign until she died. Totally lose her power until she died, because she was such a good leader. So, that it also goes back to us talking about how, you know, they're trying to outlaw trans people. They're trying to outlaw cross-dressing. They're trying to outlaw, you know, Republicans, of course, in America are trying to do this. You know, and this was, you know, something that we put out there, you know, when they took down Roe versus Wade. We, you know, a lot of us warned everyone, listen, this is just the beginning. You think they were just trying to get rid of abortion. You think they were just trying to take, you know, woman's choice away. No, 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 no. This is just the start of everything that these conservative Republicans want to do. This is just the start. And this is why I'm talking about this on this channel, because we are, you know, sex positive, is that that's where this is leading. Now they're going to start attacking trans people. They're going to start attacking gay people. They're going to try and turn, you know, marriage equality, where gay people can now marry, around. They're going to try and attack trans people, gay people, cross-dresser, whatever. They're going to attack everyone. And the thing is that these sects of people have existed for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. If you could just get rid of them, it would have happened. People need to accept that people are who they are. And, you know, lesbians, gays, cross-dressers, trans, have been around for thousands and thousands of years. This is the whole makeup of our chemistry and how biology works. You know, don't try to make people out to be what they're not, right? And I'll say that the same thing about pedophiles. If someone is a pedophile, you can't change them. You know, should we really release them out into the world? They have a problem, you know? Being a pedophile is not something that is accepted with being able to go after children. And you know, they still say that pedophiles are made. They're not born. I don't know about that. I'm not real sure about that. That the reason that we have pedophiles is because, you know, there were previous pedophiles who attacked them. So now these kids become pedophiles and so forth and so on. So it's sort of a cycle of abuse. You know, they get abused and it continues. But, you know, someone had to be born a pedophile in order to start it all, right? And that's one sect of humanity that I don't think deserves to be out in public or alive, to be honest, because when you're hurting children, you know, same thing with people who hurt animals. You know, they move on to adults to hurt adults. People who are cruel to animals then move on to adults, to humans, because they get bored with animals. And those are the ones that become serial killers. So that's a certain sect that shouldn't be allowed out in society. In fact, if they're hurting animals and they're hurting people, they should be executed, right? Because they've committed murder, right? So, you know, you have those certain sects of society that, you know, or people who are sociopaths or psychopaths, they should not be out in society. Because they commit murders, they commit cruelty. And maybe, you know, again, that's when execution should be allowed. But, you know, as far as who people are sexually, as far as being gay, as far as being trans, whatever, these are consenting adults with other consenting adults, and nobody's hurting anybody else. As long as there's not anyone being hurt in those consenting relationships, then that's their business, as far as I'm concerned. So I think that, you know, seeing that in past history that women have led, and some of them have dressed in, you know, male, what would be considered male garb, but really they were dressing in the position that they were in, which, you know, she was dressing as a pharaoh because she was a pharaoh. And when we find out all these warriors, these female warriors that have been brought out over time, I just watched a PBS special about a female warrior that they found that in a society that, you know, they had horses were like deities to them, because the horses took them in the battle, the horses helped them travel, so that was sort of their deity. They found a lot of female warriors buried in that society and found out that overall that society at that time was a matriarchal society, where the females were the ones who fought and led. So, you know, we're finding out as time goes on that, you know, yeah, these were warriors, and that's why in a patriarchal society that we live in, it's just assumed that those were not females, they were males, and that for some reason they're, you know, they hid, there are geologists and researchers that hid from the world that these women actually existed, because they didn't think it was right to say that there was at one time a matriarchal society. So they knew that these were women warriors, they just didn't talk about it, or they hid them from the world, because they didn't want women to find out that they could be warriors. They didn't want women to find out that there were totally women matriarchal led societies that worked and worked well. And yes, they had times of where they had to be warriors and they had to protect their population, but overall there was very little war, very little fighting that went on when women led, and there was more negotiation, there was more trade, there was more foreign diplomacy rather than war. So men sort of hushed, when, because mostly who was doing the research, who were the geologists, who were the scientists at that time, they were men. And so they didn't want the world to find out that women had that kind of power, that women had that kind of pull. So they hid it. And now it's coming out that those researchers, those geologists, those scientists hid all of these discoveries they've made over time, that these were women warriors, that these were women leaders. And now here we go with Hatshepsut and Thutmose and the pharaohs. Thutmose literally tried to wipe out Hatshepsut, I can't pronounce her name, tried to wipe her out of history, took her name off, destroyed statues, destroyed temples, destroyed the things that she built. We're talking, she had things built with huge monoliths. You know, you watch the scene in the Ten Commandments where Moses is apparently showing the Pharaoh at the time how he's building these huge, you know, these huge temples to honor him. And they show how the 2,000 slaves get the monolith up, you know, and it gets dropped into this space, and, you know, that might have actually been Hatshepsut who was doing that, not Moses. Or Moses might have been helping her as her, you know, adopted son. So, but really, she was the one who was pushing to have these temples that glorified her father made. So, yeah, all of that gets wiped out, right? That she's the one who built. So all of these temples, these pyramids, all of these things that you've seen may have been the result of a woman having them built. And the fact that the slaves were given food, given a day off, were treated better at that time, was maybe her influence over her adopted son Moses in saying that this is what should be done, and we're not going to kill our slaves, we're going to feed them and treat them well, so, you know, a dead slave doesn't, you know, get the work done. A tired slave, a hungry slave doesn't get the work done. They say it in the movie. So now we're finding out it could have been her as the pharaoh who did this. And her reign for, you know, 20, 30 years. And Moses might have been a part of that. He may have been, in fact, Thutmose. He may have been one of the Thutmoses that that reigned during that time. So, you know, who knows? I mean, they're still researching, they're still trying to figure it out, but it does make a lot of sense, right? Because why do we keep hearing about this woman, even in the Bible? You know, the daughter of the Pharaoh comes out in the story of Moses, right? Her name keeps coming up. So, no matter what these men have tried to do to stomp out the history of women, the herstory of women, it keeps coming back. So it comes back to me saying again how this shows, you know, they're trying to make cross-dressing a bad thing. They're trying to make women leaders a bad thing at this time. And, you know, it's a big thing about drag right now. You know, states trying to outlaw drag shows and outlaw gay people. But it's, you know, this is a part of who we are as human beings. You can't outlaw millions of people, really. Millions of people who are gay. You can't outlaw them and say that they're not allowed to exist. Because throughout history, these type of people have existed. And yes, they try to wipe them off. Male leaders later in patriarchal societies have tried to wipe them off the map because they don't. This is about power and control. This is about power and control. And the one thing that they say in the Ten Commandments, the Pharaoh says to Moses, is what? You're trying to feed these slaves. You're trying to treat them well. What are you trying to do? Build an army to overtake me? Are you trying to build an army to become Pharaoh? And he looks at him like, no, that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make sure that our slaves don't die. I'm trying to make sure that they're strong enough to be able to build these, you know, towering dedications to you. Look at what I've built. And look at the results of me treating the slaves well. Look at how much more gets done when you actually feed them, take care of them, and treat them as human beings. So the whole reason that the Pharaoh had taken over all of these lands and then enslaved these people was to keep them from overthrowing him. So that's what slavery really was meant to do, was to keep people in bondage so that they couldn't come back and overthrow the leader who took them over. So, you know, learn a lot as you study history. But also, male patriarchal societies have tried to squash the knowledge of not just gay people, but of female leaders and gay leaders, like Alexander was supposed to have been bisexual. Alexander the Great. They're trying to squash that knowledge because men or patriarchal societies need to maintain the idea that only men can lead, because they want control. They want power. They don't want, you know, women to realize, because there are more women than there are men in the world. They don't want women to realize that they can actually lead. They want them to continually keep thinking that they can't lead. Right? So this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this story on this channel, because that's really what it comes back to, is how patriarchal societies, misogyny, and all of that has come to really be just about control and to be about power over other people. And if they can convince you, the woman, or they convince the slaves that they can't fight back, then they keep that power, they keep that control. Just like the Pharaoh kept the control of the slaves because he was afraid that all of those slaves, they knew with all those slaves that power could overthrow them. What do you think? Let me know. Send me a message. Send me a text. Let me know what you think. And we're Syclectic.